I didn't wear the portable mic today, so I'm going to speak from up here. You know, when I was looking through these scriptures for today, you kind of sit back and sort of think, well, what comes to you right away? And the scriptures, all of them, have to do with authority. They have to do with where does the authority come from that enables you to make the decisions you make, that enables you to do what you do, and influences everything in your life. And what do you put your faith? And what do you put your trust? And I love the Old Testament reading when Elijah says, come on, guys, how much longer are you going to limp along with two opinions? To me, that just really resonates. How often do we limp along with two opinions? And then, in other words, with two authorities. Knowing in our heart one thing and knowing what we're really putting our trust in another. And as we look at the gospel today, the first thing that struck me is that Jesus, in this text, he says, after Jesus had finished all his sayings in the hearing of the people, but in the New Jerusalem Bible, it says, after Jesus had said all he wanted them to hear, he went to Capernaum. Now, I love that text. After he had said all he wanted them to hear, the first thought that comes to my mind was, if there's no other way to get your point across, talk. He realized that he had set out what he was going to say, but somehow he had to really connect with these people. And when we look at the text, the gospel is a living organism. It's not just words on paper. It's alive. It's living. And to jump into the middle of this text, you first ask yourself, well, what is it that he's tired of telling them? What is it that he said and he doesn't want to tell them anymore? Well, preceding this event was the Sermon on the Mount. It's the beginning of Jesus' ministry. He's still in Jerusalem, in that area. He still hasn't been pushed out. People were coming in droves to see him. Even the rabbis and some of the elders of the church, they're still supporting him. They're hoping that this will be someone that they can really bond with and will lead their people into a cohesive forward motion. And they love the words, you know, blessed are they who mourn. Blessed are those the merciful. Blessed are they whom people persecute you and revile you for my name's sake. Blessed are the peacekeepers. They love hearing that. They love the words. Be merciful. Show compassion. And then he goes on to say, at the end of the whole Sermon on the Mount, he ends it with what it means to be a true disciple. And he said, if you truly want to be my disciple, you will listen to what I have said and you will obey. Authority. You will obey. So they love this. I mean, the words sound good, don't they? We all want to be people of peace. We all want to love. You know, that's kind of, I mean, if you tell somebody that, they're going to like you. You're going to be popular with that. But then Jesus, you know, right away, he goes into Capernaum. And who is the hero of our story? A centurion? This is occupied Israel, guys. These people hate the Romans. They hate them. The Romans have come in, they occupy him. He's a centurion. He's not only a Roman soldier, he has soldiers underneath him. You know, they may appreciate the fact that he's reached out and done some good and built him some synagogues, and therefore they may want Jesus to heal his slave because they want to continue to be on the handout from this, on the dole, so to speak, from this centurion. But don't tell me that the Jews like the Roman occupation, because they hate it. Not only is this man a centurion and a Gentile, he's under the law and rule of the Caesar of Rome. He's a person of power as people underneath him. He owns slaves, for heaven's sakes. What's redeemable about this character? This is the first hero we have after the Sermon on the Mount. Why? Because this person, in all of his failings, in all of his flaws, in his place in history, which was not on the side, not in the place of Jews or a good Jewish family, or even someone who knew the law, who knew the scriptures, this person knew how to love. He loved his slave. What this translation said, he valued him dearly. Other translations say he loved him. He loved his slave. This centurion had compassion. What are we hearing? We're hearing the Sermon on the Mount. He's living the words. He has compassion. He feels for the victimized. He feels for the one that's hurting. And in the face of death, this centurion realizes that for all the power of Rome, not one day can be added to the life of the slave. He is brought face to face because he loves and because he is concerned and cares. He has gone face to face with the fact that what he has put his authority in, Rome, the law, his job, his authority, is nothing compared to the authority of Jesus Christ. And this centurion is so humbled and so aware of the presence of God's healing power so close to him in Jesus that he doesn't even come to see him. This man who orders people about sends the elders to plead for him. And the elders go, maybe not because they love the centurion, but they go because they sure want more synagogues and they want more buildings. And so they go and bargain with Jesus. And Jesus agrees to come to the centurion's house. Well, here is another big aha moment in the text. For Jesus to go into a centurion's house, he would have to defile himself. He would have to go against all the religious law of his time. This is Jesus, the up-and-coming star, the popular one. If he goes into this house, do you think those same people will be cheering him and wanting him to do good? No, they will suddenly be frightened because he will have broken one of the big tenets of Jewish law, of staying clean, of staying pure. He would have entered the centurion's house. Now, as he approaches the house, the centurion, for some reason, whether he realizes this or not, sends an envoy and says, no, no, don't come in. Don't come in. It's enough if you just heal him from afar. You don't need to be present. He will be healed just by your word. And it's at this point, Jesus says, never in all Israel have I seen such faith. This point where Jesus, where God incarnate enters into life, where the victimized are, regardless of race, regardless of political standing, regardless of social standing, regardless of religious standing. Wherever there is a victim, wherever there is someone reaching out in love for healing, God is present. And the centurion knows that. The centurion realizes that in letting go of all of his authority and letting go of his identity. We have a lot of identities that we cling to. And being a Roman was a huge identity. Being a person in power was a huge identity. Being part of the occupation for him was a huge identity. He let go of all of that in the face of love and in the face of caring. And it's at that point that the two connect. And God's healing love is shown. Now, when we look at this text, it's not by accident that the centurion doesn't have a name. The elders that go to Jesus don't have names. The envoy of people that the centurion sends to tell them that they don't have to come to Jesus' house, they don't have names either. Could it be? Because when Luke is writing this text, he's making people realize and helping us see that this healing that occurs is a healing that happened for the servant. It is a healing that happened for the centurion, for all who witnessed it. But it's also a healing that happens within the early church with these Romans who are Christians but not Jews. And it's also a healing where we are today. We are today when we choose the authority of Jesus. When we choose to take to heart the Beatitudes, to show love and compassion instead of hatred and judgment, when we choose that in our daily life, then we choose the authority of Jesus. Words in themselves mean nothing. Words in articulating the human heart and articulating the way in which we behave help us to understand our actions and to reflect on them. That's why Jesus says we must listen to the words and then obey. And in closing, I'd like to read a quote from St. Augustine. What did he in loving us love but God in us? Wherefore, let each of us love each other, as that by this working of love, we make each other the habitation of God. Let us go forth from here and make each other, each person we meet, the habitation of God. Amen.
Amen. Amen.